till he was out of sight. "I am sorry to take leave of Master Bombadil," said Sam. "He's a caution and no mistake. I reckon we may go a good deal further and see naught better nor queerer. But I won't deny I'll be glad to see this prancing pony he spoke of. I hope it'll be like the Green Dragon away back home. What sort of folk are they in Bree?"
"There are hobbits in Bree," said Merry, "as well as big folk. I dare say it'll be home-like enough. The pony is a good inn by all accounts. My people ride out there now and again."
"It may be all we could wish," said Frodo, "but it's outside the Shire all the same. Don't make yourselves too much at home. Please remember, all of you, that the name of Baggins must not be mentioned. I am Mr. Underhill, if any name must be given." They now mounted their ponies and rode off silently into the evening. Darkness came down quickly as they plodded slowly downhill and up again until at last they saw lights twinkling some distance ahead. Before them rose Bree Hill, barring the way, a dark mass against misty stars, and under its western flank nestled a large village. Towards it they now hurried, desiring only to find a fire and a door between them and the night. Chapter 9. At the Sign of the Prancing Pony. Bree was the chief village of the Breeland, a small inhabited region like an island in the empty lands round about. Besides Bree itself, there was Staddle on the other side of the hill, Coombe in a deep valley a little further eastward, and Archet on the edge of the Chetwood. Lying round Bree Hill and the villages was a small country of fields and tamed woodland only a few miles broad. The men of Bree were brown-haired, broad and rather short, cheerful and independent. They belonged to nobody but themselves, but they were more friendly and familiar with hobbits, dwarves, elves, and other inhabitants of the world about them than was or is usual with big people. According to their own tales, they were the original inhabitants and were the descendants of the first men that ever wandered into the west of the Middle World. Few had survived the turmoils of the elder days, but when the kings returned again over the great sea, they had found the Bree men still there, and they were still there now, when the memory of the old kings had faded into the grass. In those days no other men had settled dwellings so far west, or within 100 leagues of the Shire. But in the wild lands beyond Bree there were mysterious wanderers. The Bree folk called them rangers, and knew nothing of their origin. They were taller and darker than the men of Bree, and were believed to have strange powers of sight and hearing, and to understand the languages of beasts and birds. They roamed at will southwards, and eastwards even as far as the Misty Mountains, but they were now few and rarely seen. When they appeared, they brought news from afar, and told strange forgotten tales which were eagerly listened to. But the Bree folk did not make friends of them. There were also many families of hobbits in the Breeland, and they claimed to be the oldest settlement of hobbits in the world, one that was founded long before even the Brandywine was crossed and the Shire colonized. They lived mostly in Staddle, though there were some in Bree itself, especially on the higher slopes of the hill, above the houses of the men. The big folk and the little folk, as they called one another, were on friendly terms, minding their own affairs in their own ways, but both rightly regarding themselves as necessary parts of the Bree folk. Nowhere else in the world was this peculiar but excellent arrangement to be found. The Bree folk, big and little, didn't themselves travel much, and the affairs of the four villages were their chief concern. Occasionally the hobbits of Bree went as far as Buckland, or the East Farthing, but though their little land was not much farther than a day's riding east of the Brandywine Bridge, the hobbits of the Shire now seldom visited it. An occasional Bucklander or adventurous Took would come out to the inn for a night or two, but even that was becoming less and less usual. The Shire hobbits referred to those of Bree, and to any others that lived beyond the borders, as outsiders, and took very little interest in them, considering them dull and uncouth. There were probably many more outsiders scattered about in the west of the world in those days than the people of the Shire imagined. Some, doubtless, were no better than tramps, ready to dig a hole in any bank and stay only as long as it suited them. But in the Breeland, at any rate, the hobbits were decent and prosperous, and no more rustic than most of their distant relatives inside. It was not yet forgotten that there had been a time when there was much coming and going between the Shire and Bree. There was Bree blood in the brandy box, by all accounts. The village of Bree had some 100 stone houses of the big folk, mostly above the road, nestling on the hillside with windows looking west. On that side, running in more than half a circle from the hill and back to it, there was a deep dike with a thick hedge on the inner side. Over this the road crossed by a causeway, but where it pierced the hedge it was barred by a great gate. There was another gate in the southern corner where the road ran out of the village. The gates were closed at nightfall, but just inside them were small lodges for the gatekeepers. Down on the road, where it swept to the right to go round the foot of the hill, there was a large inn. It had been built long ago, when the traffic on the roads had been far greater, for Bree stood at an old meeting of ways. Another ancient road crossed the east road just outside the dike at the western end of the village, and in former days men and other folk of various sorts had travelled much on it. Strange as news from Bree was still a saying in the East Farthing, descending from those days when news from north, south, and east could be heard in the inn, and when the Shire hobbits used to go more often to hear it. But the northern lands had long been desolate, and the north road was now seldom used. It was grass-grown, and the Bree folk called it the Greenway. The inn of Bree was still there, however, and the innkeeper was an important person. His house was a meeting place for the idle, talkative, and inquisitive among the inhabitants, large and small, of the four villages, and a resort of rangers and other wanderers, and for such travellers, mostly dwarves, as still journeyed on the east road to and from the mountains. It was dark, and white stars were shining, when Frodo and his companions came at last to the Greenway crossing and drew near the village. They came to the west gate and found it shut, but at the door of the lodge beyond it there was a man sitting. He jumped up and fetched a lantern and looked over the gate at them in surprise.
"What do you want, and where do you come from?" he asked gruffly.
"We are making for the inn here," answered Frodo. "We are journeying east and cannot go further tonight."
"Hobbits? Four hobbits, and what's more, out of the Shire by their talk," said the gatekeeper, softly as if speaking to himself. He stared at them darkly for a moment, and then slowly opened the gate and let them ride through. "We don't often see Shire folk riding on the road at night," he went on, as they halted a moment by his door. "You'll pardon my wondering what business takes you away east to Bree. What may your names be, might I ask?"
"Our names and our business are our own, and this doesn't seem a good place to discuss them," said Frodo, not liking the look of the man or the tone of his voice.
"Your business is your own, no doubt," said the man, "but it's my business to ask questions after nightfall."
"We're hobbits from Buckland, and we have a fancy to travel and to stay at the inn here," put in Merry.
"I am Mr. Brandybuck. Is that enough for you? The Bree folk used to be fair-spoken to travellers, or so I had heard."
All right," said the man. "I meant no offence, but you'll find maybe that more folk than old Harry at the gate will be asking you questions. There's queer folk about. If you go on to the pony, you'll find you're not the only guests."
He wished them good night, and they said no more. But Frodo could see in the lantern light that the man was still eyeing them curiously. He was glad to hear the gate clang to behind them as they rode forward. He wondered why the man was so suspicious, and whether anyone had been asking for news of a party of hobbits. Could it have been Gandalf? He might have arrived, while they were delayed in the forest and the downs.
but there was something in the look and the voice of the gatekeeper that made him uneasy. The man stared after the hobbits for a moment, and then he went back to his house. As soon as his back was turned, a dark figure climbed quickly in over the gate and melted into the shadows of the village street. The hobbits rode on up a gentle slope, passing a few detached houses, and drew up outside the inn. The houses looked large and strange to them. Sam stared up at the inn with its three stories and many windows, and felt his heart sink. He'd imagined himself meeting giants taller than trees and other creatures even more terrifying sometime or other in the course of his journey, but at the moment he was finding his first sight of men and their tall houses quite enough, indeed too much for the dark end of a tiring day. He pictured black horses standing all saddled in the shadows of the inn yard, and black riders peering out of dark upper windows.
"We surely aren't going to stay here for the night, are we, sir?" he exclaimed. "If there are hobbit folk in these parts, why don't we look for some that would be willing to take us in? It would be more homelike."
"What's wrong with the inn?" said Frodo. "Tom Bombadil recommended it. I expect it's homelike enough inside." Even from the outside, the inn looked a pleasant house to familiar eyes. It had a front on the road and two wings running back on land, partly cut out of the lower slopes of the hill, so that at the rear the second-floor windows were level with the ground. There was a wide arch leading to a courtyard between the two wings, and on the left under the arch there was a large doorway reached by a few broad steps. The door was open and light streamed out of it. Above the arch there was a lamp, and beneath it swung a large signboard. A fat white pony reared up on its hind legs. Over the door was painted in white letters, "The Prancing Pony by Barlaam and Butterbur." Many of the lower windows showed lights behind thick curtains. As they hesitated outside in the gloom, someone began singing a merry song inside, and many cheerful voices joined loudly in the chorus. They listened to this encouraging sound for a moment and then got off their ponies. The song ended, and there was a burst of laughter and clapping. They led their ponies under the arch, and leaving them standing in the yard, they climbed up the steps. Frodo went forward and nearly bumped into a short, fat man with a bald head and a red face. He had a white apron on, and was bustling out of one door and in through another, carrying a tray laden with full mugs. "Can we?" began Frodo.
"Half a minute, if you please," shouted the man over his shoulder, and vanished into a babble of voices and a cloud of smoke. In a moment he was out again, wiping his hands on his apron.
"Good evening, little master," he said, bending down. "What may you be wanting?"
"Beds for four, and stabling for five ponies, if that can be managed. Are you Mr. Butterbur?"
"That's right. Barlaam is my name. Barlaam and Butterbur at your service. You're from the Shire, eh?"
he said, and then suddenly he clapped his hand to his forehead, as if trying to remember something.
"Hobbits," he cried. "Now what does that remind me of? Might I ask your name, sir?"
"Mr. Took and Mr. Brandybuck," said Frodo, "and this is Sam Gamgee. My name is Underhill."
"There now," said Mr. Butterbur, snapping his fingers. "It's gone again, but it'll come back when I've time to think. I'm run off my feet, but I'll see what I can do for you. We don't often get a party out of the Shire nowadays, and I should be sorry not to make you welcome. But there's such a crowd already in the house tonight as there hasn't been for long enough. It never rains but it pours, we say in Bree. Hi, Nob," he shouted. "Where are you, you woolly-footed slowcoat, Nob?"
"Coming, sir, coming."
A cheery-looking hobbit bobbed out of a door, and seeing the travellers, stopped short and stared at them with great interest.
"Where's Bob?" asked the landlord. "You don't know? Well, find him. Double sharp. I haven't got six legs, nor six eyes neither. Tell Bob there's five ponies that have to be stabled. He must find room somehow."
Nob trotted off with a grin and a wink.
"Well, now, what was I going to say?" said Mr. Butterbur, tapping his forehead. "One thing drives out another, so to speak. I'm that busy tonight, my head is going round. There's a party that came up the Greenway from down south last night, and that was strange enough to begin with. Then there's a travelling company of dwarves going west come in this evening, and now there's you. If you weren't hobbits, I doubt if we could house you. But we've got a room or two in the north wing that were made special for hobbits when this place was built. On the ground floor, as they usually prefer, round windows and all as they like it. I hope you'll be comfortable. You'll be wanting supper, I don't doubt, as soon as may be. This way now." He led them a short way down a passage and opened a door. "Here is a nice little parlour," he said. "I hope it will suit. Excuse me now, I'm that busy. No time for talking. I must be trotting. It's hard work with two legs, but I don't get thinner. I'll look in again later. If you want anything, ring the handbell and Nobble'll come. If he don't come, ring and shout." Off he went at last, and left them feeling rather breathless. He seemed capable of an endless stream of talk, however busy he might be. They found themselves in a small and cosy room. There was a bit of bright fire burning on the hearth, and in front of it were some low and comfortable chairs. There was a round table, already spread with a white cloth, and on it was a large handbell. But Nob, the hobbit servant, came bustling in long before they thought of ringing. He brought candles and a tray full of plates.
"Will you be wanting anything to drink, masters?" he asked. "And shall I show you the bedrooms while your supper's got ready?"
They were washed, and in the middle of good deep mugs of beer when Mr. Butterbur and Nob came in again. In a twinkling the table was laid. There was hot soup, cold meats, a blackberry tart, new loaves, slabs of butter, and half a ripe cheese. Good plain food, as good as the Shire could show, and homelike enough to dispel the last of Sam's misgivings, already much relieved by the excellence of the beer. The landlord hovered around for a little, and then proposed to leave them.
"I don't know whether you would care to join the company when you've supped," he said, standing at the door. "Perhaps you'd rather go to your beds. Still, the company would be very pleased to welcome you, if you had a mind. We don't get outsiders, travellers from the Shire, I should say, begging your pardon, often. And we like to hear a bit of news, or any story or song you may have in mind. But as you please, ring the bell if you lack anything."
So refreshed and encouraged did they feel at the end of their supper, about 3/4 of an hour's steady going, not hindered by unnecessary talk, that Frodo, Pippin and Sam decided to join the company. Merry said it would be too stuffy.
"I shall sit here quietly by the fire for a bit, and perhaps go out later for a sniff of the air. Mind your P's and Q's, and don't forget that you're supposed to be escaping in secret, and are still on the high road and not very far from the Shire."
"All right," said Pippin. "Mind yourself. Don't get lost, and don't forget that it's safer indoors."
The company was in the big common room of the inn. The gathering was large and mixed, as Frodo discovered when his eyes got used to the light. This came chiefly from a blazing log fire, for the three lamps hanging from the beams were dim and half veiled in smoke. Balin and Butterbur were standing near the fire, talking to a couple of dwarves and one or two strange-looking men. On the benches were various folk, men of Bree, a collection of local hobbits sitting chattering together, a few more dwarves, and other vague figures difficult to make out in the shadows and corners. As soon as the Shire hobbits entered, there was a chorus of welcome from the Breelanders. The strangers, especially those that had come up the Greenway, stared at them curiously. The landlord introduced the newcomers to the Bree folk so quickly that, though they caught many names, they were seldom sure who the names belonged to. The men of Bree seemed all to have rather botanical, and to the Shire folk rather odd names, like Rushlight, Goatleaf, Heather Toes, Appledore, Thistlewool and Ferny, not to mention Butterbur. Some of the hobbits had similar names. The Mugworts, for instance, seemed numerous, but most of them had natural names, such as Banks, Brockhouse, Longholes,
Sandheaver, and Tunnelly, many of which were used in